Yeah. Okay, I came here to win. I'm coming for the title. Yeah, this is the time. If your friends become your rivals, yeah, I've been on my grind. All I know is been survival. Now it's my time to shine. I made it to the finals.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Real with Ray podcast. Please like and subscribe to the channel so you can get notifications every time we release one. Please share it with a friend, sister, brother, cousin, and let's get started with this next episode. Let's go! First official podcast, we're going to call it Real with Ray. It's been something in my heart to do for a couple years. Super excited to get this started. Want to give a big shout out to my executive producer, Connor Smith, behind the camera. He helped bring this thing to life, and been going, you know, planning this, looking at this for a little while, how I wanted to do this, and thinking about who my first guest would be, how I want the show to be. I want to talk about a little bit everything, not just real estate. I want to talk about just economics, life, all the different things. But my driving force has been my family, and then doing real estate. Really loving that career path that I'm on right now. And so kind of based around that, but was really trying to figure out who I wanted to be for my first guest, and couldn't think of anybody else better than my wife, my wonderful wife, Tiffany. Want to put her on for my first guest and kind of start from the beginning, how we got where we are today. So we'll kind of do our first show on talking about how we met and how life has taken us down this crazy road last 15, 16, however many years it's been that we've been together, and then brought us to here today, doing this podcast, doing real estate, all the things that we do. So want to introduce my wonderful, beautiful wife, Tiffany Yeager.
Hey.
Cue the applause. We'll add that later into it. I want to start... First thing, I took a couple notes on what I want to talk about. And back when we first started dating, when we first met, we met at the gym. I was doing personal. I was actually just a spin instructor. That's all I was doing, was teaching spin. And first time that we actually interacted, Tiffany came to my spin class. Didn't know she was going to be there because it was normally ladies that were retired.
It was midday, like middle of the day, I would have been at work normally, but it was a federal holiday and I worked for the federal government.
Yep. And right before the class, I was co-teaching with another instructor that just started teaching. I said, hey, you know, it'd be funny if we switch clothes. So she wore my baggy sweats and t-shirt, and then I put on her really, really tight cut up shirt.
It was like a Zumba spandex shirt. It looked like it was like ripped apart by a leopard in the back or something.
It was pretty hot.
It was.
And then, she, of course, when I walk in, I was like, she's definitely not going to think that I like girls, for sure.
I didn't.
That was our first interaction. And but then, you know, as things progress, we became friends. And then our first date was we ran a race together.
Mm-hmm.
And
a race that, I mean, it doesn't matter, but I took first and he took second. I'm just going to put that out there.
Well, it's funny because we were running too, and I wanted to impress her, and we're running. It was at the Humane Society here in town. It was a race to raise money for animals at the animal shelter. And I thought that we were at the end, so I took off sprinting as hard as I could, and then come around this little bend, and they direct me down to go down another path, and it was a dog walking path. And I thought I was done. I wasn't. And so then I had a lot more to run, and I ended up throwing up. And I was trying to hide it from her that I had just thrown up. There's pictures after the race. My face is like beet red with white blotches. I look pretty rough.
I remember you were trying to impress me. And then at the finish line, I was like, what is on your shirt? It was vomit. Yeah.
I was like, oh, I must have got some oatmeal on me this morning. So
that's okay. You got a second date.
That was our first date.
Our first date.
And then moving forward after that, well, we started dating. And I kind of tell everybody the story because... Tiff was a little nervous. She had told a friend that she was interested in me, but she was afraid we'd be really poor if she dated me, because I didn't really have a job.
Yeah.
I didn't really have much ambition to get a quote unquote job. And, she was kind of trying to nudge me to get a job subtly. And I had a buddy that had told me about a job that paid okay. And I went and put an application for it, got hired. I told the guys, I said, man, I got to pray about it. And they're like, okay. Went in the parking lot, prayed about it, didn't feel right, came back in, said, look, I don't feel like God's telling me to take this job. And they're like, okay. They're kind of weirded out. Came back, met up with her, and she was like, how did the interview go? I said, oh, it was great. They told me I got the job. She said, oh, thank goodness. I didn't think you were ever going to work. Well, I told them I couldn't do it. I didn't want the job. She's like, what? And that's when I told her, I said, I don't want a job. I want to do something I'm passionate about. I'd worked in a factory before and hated my life. And she was like, well, what are you passionate about? And I said, fitness and houses. And at that time, the only house that I'd owned, I'd lost a foreclosure in 2008, 2009. So I said, I'm not really qualified for that. And so I'm going to go with fitness. So I ended up going the fitness route, getting certified, being a personal trainer. Did that for 15 years.
I knew you'd be a great personal trainer, though. I remember telling you, like, you have a very non-creepy vibe about you. Like, I feel like it's mostly women a lot of times that hire trainers. Not always, but, you know, majority. And I just feel like you're very good with women. You had, you know, a lot of sisters. And so I just knew it would be a good fit for you.
Ended up working out pretty good. We did it for a while, and it was fun. And then shortly after doing the personal training, we ended up getting married. Got married. One of my favorite stories about our wedding is we got married with just four people at our wedding. It was our pastor and his wife, minister at the church and his wife. We got married very quiet setting in our little church, little white church.
We eloped.
We did.
I've never been a fan of weddings. I don't like all the attention, and I just personally, I just don't want to, you know, I didn't ever want to spend money on something like that. I'd rather spend money on traveling, things like that. So yeah, we eloped, and it was good.
It was good. It was fun. We didn't tell our family for a year.
Because I knew they would be mad.
We got married, and then her dad would give me crap about not getting married to his daughter, and then we end up getting married on Valentine's Day, and then end up telling our family 1 year later on Valentine's Day.
We didn't plan for that either. My parents invited us to dinner with my grandparents, and it happened to be on Valentine's Day. And so we were at like a steak restaurant, and my dad made some sort of backhand comment, if I remember right, about, you know, living with his daughter but not being married to her, and then it just came out, so...
Well, we were pregnant, and he was like, my daughter's good enough to have a baby with, but not good enough to marry. And I said, well, actually, we've already been married for a year. So that was kind of how that came out. But and we kind of had the feeling we were going to tell him on that day on our anniversary. And it went pretty good. They were happy for us and thankful that we'd gotten married. And so I think that's a fun story. I like that about. And we said, well, we'll have a wedding later. And we never have, maybe one day.
Yeah, we never. Never did a wedding and never did a honeymoon or anything like that. We've done a lot of traveling, though, so.
And then next in our timeline, we had our first daughter, which we were pregnant, I think, when we told our family, or she was maybe already born. Yeah, she was already born at that point. And so she's now 10, raising, we got 10-year-old double digit now. And then she was about 3 years old. Yeah, I think she was about 3 years old. And that's when we sold our first house, sold for sale by owner.
Yeah.
That was an experience. We ended up getting sued afterwards.
Would never do that again.
And, we would now that I'm a realtor, but we learned a lot from it. And
wouldn't do for sale by owner, but we wouldn't need to because you're a realtor. But back then we didn't know about, you know, all the paperwork and all that kind of stuff.
We won in court.
It was a silly lawsuit, but silly. We didn't know what we were being sued for. It didn't say.
But the anxiety and the nervousness and... I always, you know, now being a realtor, I tell people, hey, this is one of the things that, you know, can happen if you want to go for sale by owner. And like I said, it worked out all right, but it was a good learning experience. You know, after that, we rented a house, a tiny little house for 7 months.
Teeny tiny. I mean, we couldn't even fit our clothes in the bedroom. I had to roll out of my bed, like literally roll out of the bed and duck under some stuff to get out. How many square feet was that?
Like 650, something like
that. It was no basement. It was something.
It was a good experience. We're living on top of each other. And then eventually bought our second house, lived there for 2 years. One night, Tiff went to a concert with some girlfriends, just praying through the house. I felt like God spoke to me that it was time to sell the house. Called our realtor at the time. Said, hey, can you come put a sign in the yard and put up for sale? Sold that house.
I came home from the concert to a for sale sign in the yard.
And she's I was like, oh, so we're selling our house. So that was an experience. And then right before that, we'd gotten pregnant in that second house and had our second daughter. She was like a newborn. And then we had an opportunity to buy a house from a good friend of mine. He had posted on Facebook, and I told Tiff about it. She's like, I don't know. I couldn't stop thinking about the house. I contacted him, and he said he'd gotten like 100 responses on Facebook, and people were writing him, being kind of crappy to him about it. And he said, you know, didn't want to rent it, didn't want to renovate it. He just kind of wanted to get out of it. And so I'll give it to you exactly what I owe on it. And then, so we ended up buying it, fixing it up. Our plan was to live there and not have a mortgage, take the money that we got, the equity from our house when we sold that, and just live mortgage-free, have an easy life, you know, relax, not having to worry about that payment. And then we hadn't even closed on selling the other house, buying that house, and we found the house that we're at right now. That came up. I was actually in North Carolina training for a job. And I saw it come up, and we'd made a deal that I wouldn't look any more houses. I was kind of obsessed with Zillow and Realtor.com and looking at houses. And we were like, all right, we have a plan. When we had bought our previous house, we saw like 50, 60 houses. And then finally settled on that one. I always say I never felt at home there. Kind of knew it wasn't the house. Every time a house would come up that like better, I'm like, see, we could have had this. We just would have waited. And so I was driving my wife nuts with that.
I liked that house. It was on the country club, and I just liked that I could, on Sundays, I could take the golf cart and drive across the course and have brunch. I thought it was very convenient. It was a fun neighborhood to live in, but Ray didn't really care. It wasn't his vibe.
It was fine. I just, like I said, never felt at home there. We just, I felt like there was something better for us out there, And then this house came up. Of course, I was out of state, and then called Tiff, and she's like, oh, she's like, didn't want to even give me time of day on it.
I said I didn't like any of the homes that we had looked at before. Like, nope, 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 nope. And then when I came and walked through this one without you, it was me and Amelia and baby Kaya. Walked through it without you. I was like, oh, darn, this house is perfect and amazing. You always wanted a pole barn. I always wanted like a big saltwater pool. I had both of those. It's like a country setting before we were in town in Lakeview. And I say we're country. A lot of people don't consider this country, but it feels very country to me.
Not country,
out here.
It's a neighborhood.
But this was like too amazing that I think I put in the offer without you. You weren't even here. Right?
Well, no, I was still there. We talked about it. I was on video. I was like, just take me to the pole barn. That's the only thing I care about. As long as the house is standing, I'm good with it. And then so we went in, put an offer in, and that was a tense situation because we had to sell the one house, buy the other house because I didn't want to lose on that investment, and then also, you know, be able to purchase this house. So we had to be very strategic in our money and our timing and all of that. But it all worked out, God's plan, and we've now been in this home for 5 years. And then thank God too, because shortly after that, we bought this house in July, and then COVID happened that following February, March, which, but funny story about that, I guess, kind of funny. I always wanted a pole barn. I wanted to have it set up. I love March Madness. I'd set up several TVs, had everything all set up, you know, ready for March Madness, like the perfect like man mansion setup. And the, you know, get like hang up the last TV and get the last couch in place, ready just to absolutely veg out and watch March Madness. And they canceled the whole thing. And I was just in spite of me. Are you kidding me? Like, yeah. But
I forgot how upset you were about that.
Oh, I was so sad. I was so mad. But it happens. But and we're
your
thankful.
Mom told me that back in high school she'd let you skip school.
That's true.
Just
story.
To watch March Madness, and I'm like, oh, that's too much.
We made a deal in middle school that if I had all A's, if I had all good grades or all A's, that on March Madness I could skip to Thursday and Friday, the first 2 days of March Madness. So it was always my incentive to have good grades up to that point. After that was downhill. But I'd make sure I had good grades, skip Thursday and Friday, and just veg out and watch March Madness. It's probably my favorite 4 days of sports is March Madness time. And then, so it was a blessing, though, because if we would have stayed in that house that we had bought that we weren't going to have a mortgage, and during COVID lockdown, that would have been a really tough. I mean, it was a smaller house.
It didn't really have a yard.
Didn't have much of a yard. It had been really tough here. We had the pole barn. We had, the pool. We could escape. And then, of course, we get pregnant, right at the beginning of COVID. So we had our third daughter, COVID baby. So we're locked down. And if you know Tiffany, she's the happiest pregnant person ever. Just kidding. She's not. She's like the opposite of that. Okay. So we have our third baby during COVID lockdown, and so Tiff was pregnant over that whole period of time. House worked out perfectly, though, because we had space, and It was such a blessing to be here. It's like I'm being serious when I say it was one of my favorite times ever. We didn't have to leave. We're just here at home, hanging out every day. Ended up being a great time. I really enjoyed COVID. Tiff didn't because she was pregnant.
Yeah, I am not a happy pregnant person. I get massive. I gained 80 pounds with all three pregnancies, and I'm only 5'4", so that was a lot on my frame. But it was funny because when I was pregnant during COVID, people would see us afterwards and say, "When did you have a third kid? I didn't know you had another daughter." And I'd say, "Yeah, well, she was a COVID baby." Like, nobody saw me when I was pregnant. So,
And then after that, it was we got through COVID. And then shortly after that, I feel like this is the beginning of this journey that we're on now. I feel like as all those things kind of came. I worked for Burn Boot Camp, worked for them, got hired when we were still at that second house, or that house that we were talking about we sold before this house. And then during COVID, we built something in our barn, worked here, from home. And then towards the end of COVID, Tiff had gotten COVID, had COVID pneumonia, and that was like in June, and we were so sick with COVID. And then Tiff just, she kept thinking, I must be a long hauler, I'm not getting better. And then we went on a vacation. We had won a vacation with Burn. We went to Puerto Rico, and it was like right around that time when we got back, I remember Tiff saying, "I don't know what's wrong with me, but I feel like I'm dying." And she doesn't really remember saying that, but I remember saying that. I was like, "Oh, man." And I was like, well, she'd been tired. And I'm like, "Well, you're a mom, and, we've got a busy life." And then that was around October, early November, we went on that trip. So shortly after that. And then we ended up coming down with COVID again in January. And I could just tell from the first time she had COVID pneumonia that
I had never fully recovered from the first time I had COVID.
Right. Well, so. And I remember her saying that. And then her oxygen levels, we had a pulse ox, and her oxygen levels mm-hmm. were getting down. So went back to the hospital.
Well, and, I couldn't, towards the end there, I couldn't even lift my head off the pillow. I was working from home still. And so I would set up my computer, and I had to set it up on the floor. And I thought, man, this COVID is really hitting me so hard. And it's probably because I have long hauler COVID from the first time. So I would be like literally laying on the floor, so lethargic, and attending meetings and writing documents. And then on my lunch break, I would just fall asleep. And it was really bad. And I remember telling my coworkers, like, I can't keep going like this. I hate to overburden the hospital by saying, "Hey, I'm sorry I'm here, I have COVID," because that was still happening at that point. But I said, "I have to go to the hospital." So we went up to the hospital as soon as I signed off of my computer.
When we did, 3 little ones, her mom came up and we had 3 little ones, so we kind of snuck out.
Yeah, we didn't want to tell them because then they'd be like, "Why are you going to the hospital?" So my mom came up and we're like, "Grandma's here." And then we just slid out.
Slid out, and then ended up being a long wait. And at that time, they didn't allow, it was still COVID time, so they didn't really allow, I couldn't stay up mm-hmm. at the hospital with her. I could drop her off, couldn't stay in the waiting room with her.
I kept telling the nurse, I kept checking in saying, it was a 6-hour wait that I was in the emergency room. And I kept seeing people come in, be seen and leave, come in, be seen and leave. And I kept asking her, saying, "I'm not feeling well." And I remember she made a comment that said, "Well, you look fine."
I remember I came up, I brought you soup. We brought it in a can, like a canteen thing. And I came up and the whole waiting room was different. And they have a sign in there that basically said, like, don't yell at our employees, don't, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And, but I got pretty frustrated. And I went up and I remember telling them, I could tell by Tiff's color that she, her color, or the way that her skin looked, I could tell that she wasn't doing good. And I came up, I remember I told the girl sitting there, I said, I guarantee you my wife's more sick than anyone in here. And I guarantee you her oxygen is below the level because I'd seen her.
I remember
that
you were
before.
Saying that about my oxygen because I was like, I'm just having a hard time breathing. And I had told the nurses that, but apparently I looked too healthy.
She looked too healthy that day. And they came, and she was like, okay, fine. You know, real nonchalant. We'll check her again. When they came over, I want to say it was like 86, 87 was her oxygen. And
it was low 80s.
They jumped into action pretty quick. They didn't argue with me. I went straight back with her, which at that time you weren't supposed to. But I was already a little frustrated and a little amped up. So they didn't really argue with me much. Went back with her. And they started put her on oxygen and then started drawing blood from her. And I remember the blood.
It was like purple. It wasn't like a regular blood vial. It was really dark. And it had like almost like a white marbleized swirl in it. And I said something to the lab techs. I said, why does my blood look like that? It's really beautiful. It looks like paint or something. Like it was a completely different looking blood than you would normally see at a blood draw.
It definitely looked different. Definitely stood out. I thought at the time maybe it was because the oxygen level, maybe, you know, the blood isn't getting the same oxygen. So maybe it does something like that. It reminds me of like, if you've ever gotten a cut and the, you know, blood is like streaming down and then it starts to harden up and turn kind of purplish
like
at first.
Old and stagnant.
But right before it fully hardens, that kind of purplish color, that's what it looked like. And then it wasn't much longer that they came in and I've always been thankful for the doctor. She came in pretty quickly and said, you know, hey, I just want to let you know that your blood count, your WBC, your white blood cell count, should be between 4 and 11, and I want to say it was like 240 or 340. I can't remember. It was extremely high, way, way, way over what it was supposed to be. And she said, I've never seen any blood counts this high and it not be cancer, and I want to prepare you guys that this isn't,
She was specific, though. She said blood cancer
and she said,
of some sort.
And she said, we're gonna send you by ambulance over to U of M. It's more than what we can deal with here. And, she said, you know, they're going to be here in a minute. And I want to prepare you that this isn't a couple day stay in the hospital. This is going to be weeks to months. And I was pretty upset. I wanted to drive you. I didn't want to accept that. I thought, oh, she's got COVID. It's throwing these numbers off. Run the test again. I was in complete denial.
I wasn't.
And Tiff, she was, you know.
I looked at the doctor and said, I knew it. I knew something was very seriously wrong. I felt like I was dying for months. Like I could feel my body was trying to fail me and I could feel it. But at the same time, I had COVID twice and I just thought it was COVID. But I didn't cry or anything. I almost was just kind of relieved, like, okay, well, there is something wrong and now we're gonna deal with it. But I did want to go home and say goodbye to the kids because they didn't even know that I snuck out to the hospital. I wanted to go home and hug them. And I asked the doctor if I said, well, I'm from that side of the state originally. I know where the hospital is in Ann Arbor. I'm going to go home and hug my kids and I'll drive there myself. And she said, I don't think you understand how sick you truly are. Your white blood count is so high that I'm guessing at most you would have another 24 hours left to live. You're going to get very tired and you're going to fall asleep and you're just not going to wake up because your blood is so thick, it's going to clog like in your heart. And it was hard to hear, but at the same time, I feel like a lot of times doctors can sometimes like sugarcoat things to soften the blow. And I so appreciated her honesty. And I said, okay, well, guess we'll do the ambulance. But Ray couldn't ride with me in the ambulance because, again, it was COVID timing. So they were like, you have some sort of blood cancer. We aren't equipped to treat it here. You have to leave now. And so I had to get in the ambulance alone. He did follow me, all the way there. But then when we got to the hospital and the ambulance was like taking me out, he tried to come into the University of Michigan with me, and they said, you can't come in because of the COVID guidelines. So
I got to, I was able to kiss her, and then they basically closed the door, and that was it. And then that started, it was a rough stay. That was a rough drive home. And then, you know, start that process of I think it was the next day. They didn't have a lot of choice. She had to go through what was called leukophoresis. They put a central line down her neck, pumped her blood out, and then filtered it, took out the white blood cell count to get it low enough to be able to start chemo.
A machine that was like a dialysis sort of machine.
Essentially, it was like dialysis, just with her blood. So started that right away, got your count low enough to be able to start that first round of chemo. We really didn't have much many options or many choices on, you know, it was so, she was so sick that we had to,
they wouldn't even allow me around the other cancer patients. They kept me in the ICU for 2 weeks. So that was another thing. Like,
it tested positive for COVID.
Yep. So I found out, you know, I have blood cancer. I don't get to say goodbye to my kids. And then I am completely isolated with nobody to talk to, no family or anything for 2 weeks, the very first 2 weeks. So that was, it was hard. It was really hard, but
I was able to drop off, we did iPads. So I was able to take her up. I remember going shopping for pajamas because didn't have like big baggy pajamas or whatever didn't have much of those. Went and bought some of those, got an iPad and a stand, and delivered that. I always joke during that time I had a virtual wife because I'd take you everywhere. So, you know, school drop offs to everywhere I went, you know,
the iPads were always on.
They're always,
always
on.
And, even when we were sleeping, I had it by my bedside.
Which honestly, I mean, I was able to talk with every doctor, every nurse, ask questions. I was always present for that. She was always present with the kids. And then when she started the chemo, I remember there were two nurses that had came in. We had favor with them. And one of the big things for me was I didn't want you to lose your hair, and I didn't want someone else to shave it off. I wanted to be the one that shaved your hair off for you. And was talking with these nurses, and they were trying to be helpful. They're, we'll sneak in, we're gonna figure out something. And we were talking with them, they were very sweet. And then when they were in there one day, I said, hey, before you girls go, do you mind setting my heart to pray for you? And we prayed for them, prayed for their families, and then prayed over the situation about me coming up there. And one of the cool God stories, they leave, I come back out, we had a friend over, I believe my mom was there, our girls were getting ready for dinner, it was kind of later in the evening. 10 minutes later or less, I hear all this commotion on the iPad. I'm like, what's going on? And she turns the camera, and they've got a piece of paper, and they're jumping, waving it.
They, busted into my room. Literally ran into my room. They were so excited.
It was on a Thursday night at, 7 p.m. They received an email saying that the COVID restrictions had been lifted. And I remember Tiff going, you didn't pray for just me to have you come up. You prayed for the whole hospital to get visitors. And it was a really cool God thing. And I always say, if you imagine if their faith was here, after they got that news, we prayed for it. They left. The email was there. COVID restrictions were, you know, just out of the blue were lifted. Their faith was up here after that. It was pretty amazing God story. And so I was, all right, I'm packing my bag. I'll be there first thing in the morning. And came up. And then that next day, shaved your hair off, which that was, I didn't know how Tiff was going to take it. I didn't know.
I kind of felt like at that point in my life, my identity was my hair. As silly as that sounds, you know, I had really long, waist length, platinum blonde hair. And it was just kind of my signature look. And then to lose it all, I was pretty sad about it. It's a lot, you know, and people always say, well, hair grows back. It takes a really long time. I think people don't really realize how long it takes for hair to grow. But I was so grateful that you got to cut my hair and we recorded it and, you know, to be able to look back at and show the kids, you know, I went through this and it's okay. And after that, I was you know, how shallow is that? That I think, oh, people think of Tiffany and they think of her long blonde. Hair. I want people to think of Tiffany and think, you know, she talked to me about God, you know, or Tiffany always makes me feel good when I talk to her, or, you know, I would rather be associated with those type of things than how I might look.
And it was, I mean, I remember that was a tough day, mm-hmm. but you handled it so well, like didn't really show any emotion about it. You're so strong about it. And it was one of those crazy things where, I didn't know why, but I felt like I was supposed to document everything. I was recording, you know, cutting your hair. I was recording just, you know, a little bit of everything going on at that time. And then I remember I asked you to pose holding up your ponytail. And I remember posting that picture with a Bible verse. And people thought it was a stock photo. They didn't know that.
Yeah,
they didn't think it was really
that.
You. But I didn't know, said like this, I didn't really know what I was going to feel seeing my wife bald, you know. And you look so beautiful. You're like Demi Moore, G.I. Jane, you know, you had that look going on. And, you know, you still was my beautiful wife. And so I was thankful for, you know, being able to be there and cut your hair. And so we had so much more on our plate at that time. And one thing that I want to say, too, is during the time that you were sick, right after we had posted that picture of you, and we posted a video, again, like, I think it was a God thing that he had, you know, it was one night we were actually just sitting there and we were praying, and I was praying over you, and I felt like God just spoke to me to make a video. So I didn't even remember taking pictures of you in the hospital before, because our friend Angie Krieger came over and was with the kids, and mm-hmm. I sent her some pictures. I didn't remember having those on my phone. And so I felt like when we were praying, God just kind of streamed this, like, video together. And so I started editing it, and then we were looking for a perfect song. There's this Naomi Raine song that we had never heard that had been out for like a year or 2 years. Mm-hmm. We put with that, and then we posted that. And, you know, we got so many views so fast, so many people reaching out. And then at the same, and also one thing too with talking about how humbling it was for us when you were sick. I always tell this story, you know, we've been blessed enough to be able to bless others. I remember when I was young, I was poor, I didn't have any money. I was barely had enough money to get to church and get home. And there was a cookout after church. Pastor Carl Downer, who was one of the four people at our wedding, he came up at this cookout and said, man, God's just put us on my heart and gives me like $20. And my pride rose up and I said, man, I can't accept that. You know, I don't want to take your money. And he's like, no, man. He's like, the way he explained it was, you know, when we bless others, God will re-bless us fivefold, tenfold, hundredfold. Mm-hmm. So if you don't accept his blessing, you steal my blessing. And we've always, that changed my heart in being able to receive a blessing, but also to give blessings. And when we've been fortunate enough to bless others, when others have had difficulties with that, we've relayed that same message. Well, then fast forward to you being sick, you know, so many people start reaching out and wanting to donate and to you know, pour into us, and that was very humbling. It was very difficult being on that receiving end.
I remember at first you were telling people no, and I was on a, you know, we had those iPads set up, so I was on a video with you, yep. And some random man
in Meijer
tried to give you like $50, and you said you couldn't accept it, and I said, yes, you can.
He, like, said, don't steal that man's blessing.
Don't steal his blessing. I mean, you know, I worked for the federal government for 21 years, and then I didn't have a job. You know, and then you couldn't work because you had suddenly three kids that you had to care for full time, you know, with all the different school drop-offs and their activities and taking care of them and doing everything, plus trying to go up to Ann Arbor multiple times a week to see me. And that, you know, it was expensive. You know, that's 3 hours driving, yeah. You know, gas money and all that. And so it was hard. I remember how hard it was for you to accept those blessings that people were trying to give us.
That first time was hard. I was walking through Meijer getting you those pajamas, mm-hmm. and guy I barely knew, he saw me, said, "Man, I'm so sorry. I heard what's going on with your wife," reached in his pocket, pulled out $50. And I said, "Oh, man, I can't take that." And you said, my virtual wife on iPad said, mm-hmm. Don't steal that man's blessing. And I said, "You're right." I took it, turned the corner, and I started bawling my eyes out. It was hard feeling in that, feeling vulnerable like that. And I always tell the story, too, that it's only about 3-4 days after you got sick and I realized you couldn't work. I wasn't going to be able to work taking care of the girls. If we're not working, we're not getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
And I prayed to God. I asked God, what am I supposed to do? How am I going to support my family, keep this roof over our head and feed my kids? And very clearly God spoke, "I will provide."
Yeah.
And I stood on that word the whole time, and God used people. And I really have been, it's been on my heart to thank so many people. There was a GoFundMe mm-hmm. that was set up, and so many people from our Battle Creek, Michigan community that reached out and donated. And then
people that we didn't even know that had just seen it on Facebook or knew a friend of a friend that happened to know us. I don't think we mentioned what kind of cancer I had. If people don't know, I had AML leukemia, which is the least favorable form of leukemia. It was very, very serious. Not very good survival rate. And so we knew that I was going to be in the hospital for quite a while until I could get a bone marrow transplant. And the community was like, I just feel like they were like, "We're going to take care of you guys. Tiffany's going to be gone for a long time. We're going to make sure that you are provided for." We had so many meals donated. Ray would be...
I could never eat pasta again.
running with the kids and then going to Ann Arbor. And by the time everybody got home at night, there was always a hot meal. And that was...
It was
amazing. It was amazing.
Well, and the way that people just reached out, poured out, it was, again, it was very humbling and just... But it truly just, blessed us in so many different ways. And we never went without. I went almost, a year and a half without working at all. And you mm-hmm. haven't worked since. And we were able to make it. And I think it's a true testament to God, how God used people, how people were just
right.
so generous. Again, people we didn't know, people we did know, people we barely knew.
Yeah.
And we even had people from out of state.
The car dealerships were sending us gas cards.
We had a lot of blessings and just, mm-hmm. Anybody that's watching this that, donated or whatever you guys, anybody that did
what
anything.
What car dealership was that?
That was Hinkle.
Hinkle, yes.
Reached out and gave us a gas card.
A few times they did that.
Or gas cards and mm-hmm. Oil change and a few other things.
Yeah.
And, so thankful for everybody for that. So thank you from the bottom of our heart.
Helped Mary Husinga with Our World for Children was like, "I've got you guys with your kids. Like, if you need help, if you can't make it back from an appointment in time, I mean, she offered to like watch them, on times that maybe they weren't even going to be in the daycare. She
Dog
was a
zone.
Huge blessing. Dog zone.
We got a puppy 4 days before Tiffany got sick. And 4 days before Tiffany got sick. And God always has a plan because, mm-hmm. I always joke that, Tiff was stone cold through this whole thing, man. Like just never everything. She was just next step, laser yeah. focus. I was crying every single time I'd be at the hospital, crying every time on the way home. She'd be like, "Oh my gosh, you're crying again." I couldn't stop crying the whole entire time.
Well, and
time.
Every time someone would do something kind, you would be like, "Oh, thank you, thank you." And then as soon as they'd walk away, you'd be like, "Oh, I can't believe it."
I just cried so much. And then, I joke that we got this golden doodle. She was just like a walking, barking handkerchief for me. Just all of her fur would absorb all my tears. And she was my really kind of a therapy for me. We joked just the other day because I was letting her sleep with me, and Tiff came home and was like, "This dog stole my spot." They had a little beef in the beginning, like the dog took her place because she was, like I said, only here 4 days before she got sick. But Dog Zone,
we had this
owner
puppy
reached out and she said, "I can't take yeah. away cancer. But my goal is to give you the best trained dog in Calhoun County."
Yeah, because we couldn't train her. We got this puppy and then I'm gone and you're doing all these things and she needs to be potty trained. And
I had no idea how to train a dog or raise mm-hmm. a dog. And plus with everything else going on, so they, they provided that for us. And so I'm just, you know, I don't want to name too many because there's so many that I'll leave out. But yeah. It was just such a blessing in so many ways. And so this is how people stepped up. And then, you know, and then moving forward, you know, with our kids, they were so resilient, the way the schools, you know, wrapped their arms around them and loved on them and got them through everything, you know, but just we're so thankful for everybody. You know, if you're watching this, listening to this, you know, again, from the bottom of our heart, thank you for that. And
I feel like I haven't forgotten. Like, I remember so many things. I feel like people are like, well, I took them one meal. They're not going to remember. I remember.
Oh, I remember them all.
I remember.
Same. I've actually probably, it's been about 6-7 months ago, I can still access the GoFundMe, and I just scrolled through just, you know, got to put it in my heart and just wanted a little bit of time to be thankful, you know, and scrolled through all the names and just, I was kind of praying over every name and just thanking every one of those people in my own silence and through my prayer, praying for each and every person that had donated to us, that I hope that it came back to them fivefold, tenfold, 100-fold blessings to them for blessing us. And we got through it, you know, we got through it. And
yeah, it was amazing. Cause like I said, I worked for the government for 21 years. So I made, a good, you know, income, and then I had nothing, and we didn't lose our house. You know, we were able to eat every day, you know, we were very, very lucky.
We're truly, truly blessed. And then moving forward, you know, when we're getting through that, talking about the cancer too. So it ended up being, if you don't know, Tiff went through first round. We'll kind of just give a quick synopsis of that all. Tiff went through the first round of chemo. It didn't get the cancer down enough for her to have stem cell transplant. So then she was scheduled to go in for a second round of chemo. But during that time, she had a pre-diagnosed skin cancer that was on her nose. Insurance wouldn't, and looking back now is such a blessing too, but insurance wouldn't let her proceed forward with the next round of treatment until the skin cancer had been addressed. And so we were frustrated at that time because it was so, you know, volatile situation for her to get there.
I'm thinking skin cancer or AML leukemia, which one is more serious? But what we didn't know was, so I had a basal cell carcinoma, which is a very common form of skin cancer. And the way they treat that is just you have a Mohs procedure where they kind of cookie cutter cut out, and then they check the margins and see if they need to take more. Very, very common. But what we didn't know is that when you are under like IV chemotherapy, your immune system is like destroyed. And when you don't have an immune system and you have skin cancer, it will spread like wildfire. Even if it's a skin cancer, like a simple one, like a basal cell, it will spread really quickly. So we went in and to have that addressed, and I thought I was just going to have like a Mohs procedure. It was on my nose, and I would assume like maybe a nickel size spot, a dime or a nickel removed from my nose. And they started cutting and checking margins and having to cut more and having to cut more, and they just could not get clear margins until finally my entire nose was gone. And
I think that was, I think between the day we found out that the first round of chemo didn't work, and then that day was the two hardest days.
Yes.
And that one was rough because I remember we went in, it was they called us, I was on the way to drop my daughters off at school, and it's, you know, 7:40 in the morning, and we needed to get in. Time was of the essence because you only had a certain amount of time before the cancer was going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
They'd gotten it down with the chemo, so it was a very small window in which they could do the Mohs procedure. I got a call at 7:40 that you need to be there by 9:00. And so I flew in, drove like a crazy person, threw my kids out of the car. Like, I'd called the school, I need somebody to meet me out here, grab the kids, peeled out. And then, I mean, I drove extremely fast, had you waiting outside, you jumped in the car. I mean, 100 miles an hour on the highway to get there. And all the way up to, there was a red light and people stopping. And I went around in a turn lane and went by all the cars, face first. Who am I facing? An officer. And I go around the cars, cut right through the red light, didn't care because they told us if you didn't make it at 9:00, you couldn't have the procedure.
Yep.
Drove, lights come, car, I mean, cops obviously flips around, got his lights on. I'm like, he's just
I jumped out of the car and just ran into U of M.
I said, he's going to have to follow me to the doors. So he's behind me for a little while. We get up to the doors, told her, as soon as we get there, you just jump out and run. So she jumped out, ran in. Cop came up. And I said, look, I'm sorry. I know I broke a bunch of, I had a lot of traffic violations there. I know my wife has cancer. I had to get her here. There's a procedure. They just called me. We just drove an hour and 20 minutes. Give me whatever tickets you want. I'm sorry. And he said, Tiff was bald at the time. And he goes, that was your wife? I said, yes. And he went back to his car. He came back. He said,
don't cry.
I get choked up every time I tell this story. He said, my heart feels for you, man, and I'm praying for you. And he let me go. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't even move the car. I just started bawling. I just flooded tears, man, and still get choked up. I'm so thankful for that officer and having that, just so grateful for him to have that compassion for me at that time. And mm-hmm. could have gave me a whole bunch of tickets, and hit his quota for the month for sure just off that. But, and some really good officers out there. And got that Mohs procedure, and I remember then, too, sitting there, it was like you went in, they cut. Nope, we didn't get all margins. And it wasn't that. What they do is, if you've never had Mohs or familiar with it, they cut it out, and then they test all around, or they test whatever they cut out.
They check the margins.
They check the margins, mm-hmm. and they had to go wider all the way around, and then all the way around. I want to say it's four or five times, and I remember it's one time that I felt like you held your composure the whole time, but you were really getting freaked out. You're like, they're cutting my face off. I remember you saying that. And by the time they were done, they had cut out to your cheeks, up, between your eyes there. Entire nose was gone. And
how are you going to fix that?
Dr. Kim, they had first told Tiff she could eat. And then
because they thought it was just a Mohs where, they would.
A simple Mohs procedure that they would do, maybe a little skin graft or sew it tight.
Sew it tight.
At this point, it was too much. They needed full reconstruction. And so they, Tiff had ate, so they couldn't let her go under for a while. And we were put with Dr.
They don't
Kim
want you to have food on your tummy for anesthesia.
And we met with her, and she said, we could do this tomorrow, or you could wait here and we do it tonight. And we didn't want you to go home, have the meds start wearing off, having no nose and all of that. So we elected to stay. And she stayed pretty much a middle of the night procedure by the time had passed.
Her day was up too. She was getting ready to leave, but she waited for, however many hours, 4 hours or something.
Yep.
And then did this whole procedure, which took a long time because I had over 250 stitches for that very first procedure. They did a full forehead flap where, my current nose used to be my scalp. So.
Well, still is. They cut her across her forehead, down the middle. They took her forehead and her scalp, flapped it down, and then sewed it all. And the other blessing is they didn't think that they would be able to get it all together. Mm-hmm. And they got all together minus a little spot in the mm-hmm. top. And then I remember coming in the next morning and they had you wrapped up like a mummy, and we got it on video. And Dr. Kim was so sweet. He never dealt with any nurses. It was always Dr. Kim, and she unwrapped you and cleaned it up. And I remember saying, oh, it's not as bad as, I thought it was going to be. And
it was pretty gruesome.
But that was before even you started swelling up. And, they kept it attached for the blood flow.
Yep.
And then, and wild thing was your nose would grow hair because it was part of your scalp.
Yeah.
So you'd have it.
Thank God for laser hair removal.
Yep. And then, so we went through that. I remember you were just so ready. We had to go a couple of weeks with that mm-hmm. flap, and you're afraid you're going to scare the kids.
Yeah, it's a two-step surgery, so they have to keep it still attached to your, from where it was before. So it kind of flaps over your eye, so you've got, this weird piece of skin over your eye because they have to keep the blood flow going so that it doesn't die. And then about, 3 or 4 weeks later, they unattach that. And let it heal. And I think I've had under 10. I've had a lot of surgeries and stuff since then on my face to get it to where it is now, which I feel looks pretty decent. It could look a whole lot worse. So I'm just very grateful for that.
And then tons of lasers and countless appointments and Dr. Kim was always, you know, so positive about everything and just, you know, how we, I'll fix this, I'll fix that. She just, you know, so wonderful. And I remember you being nervous. It was our daughter's birthday party and you wanted to sit up, you know, in the dark.
Well, that was only like 2 days or something after the initial. So I looked like a monster. It was very, it was hard. I knew that if her friends saw me, that they would be scared. So we had her birthday party and I kind of hid. My mother-in-law was very gracious and she helped me set it up, and you helped a lot. And I think your sister came too. I can't remember. But other people helped me like run the party and I just kind of hid out. So that was interesting, but we got through that. And then we were able to start that second round of chemo, which is, that was our goal, to get to that and get that started before my blood count got too crazy again.
Then I remember when you were afraid the kids, the girls were going to be scared of you. And I got on video when the girls first saw you and they weren't, they just were happy you're home, kissed and hugged you. And it's just, you know, such a blessing that our girls were just, they didn't care. They just wanted mommy, you know, went through that. And I remember we were on such like a, it was such a stressful time because we were trying to get you healed before you went back on chemo because that was going to bring your immune system down.
Yeah.
And then we were afraid of infection. It was such a volatile point of the cancer and all of that. And your blood count started going back up and they said, look, we're out of time. Mm-hmm. We got to get you back on chemo.
When you still actively have leukemia, AML leukemia, I think, once you're diagnosed, if you don't get treatment started, because there's different forms of leukemia, but with AML, I think you're like, the longest that you can make it is about 6 months. So we knew that we had to get that going.
Yeah, I remember when we went back in, when you started going back under chemo, that second round, where things had healed, it started looking like it wasn't healed anymore.
Yeah,
you were bleeding.
It started, bringing my immune system back down. And so I was like, oh, man, these scars are going to be rough.
It was tough.
They were opening back up and, oozing and bleeding. And but not enough to where, like, the skin was dying or anything like that. So I knew it was going to be rough, but then I also knew there's things like lasers and that I could have more surgery and things like that. And, I wasn't really worried about it.
You're just worried about living.
My goal was like, I got to survive the leukemia. That's the main thing here.
Yeah. When we'll go, got through that second round. And that was the worst one for the most part. That was, you had staph infections and
I was very sick. My PICC lines, which are things that they put in your arm to pump the chemo and like IV meds and stuff through, they kept getting infected. And I think it was because the first round of chemo made me develop an allergy to what is that stuff that they clean with? Chlorhexidine, which is what they clean and prep things with at the hospital. It used to be iodine, I believe, like the dark red stuff. But now they use chlorhexidine. So I had developed an allergy to it, and you're supposed to clean your entire body with it every day when you have PICC lines, and I couldn't. So I would get, one arm infected, switch to the other arm, and I think I had 3 PICC lines that stay.
I remember that was rough, and then we got through it. We prayed through it. We got through that second round, and then thankfully, even backtracking a little bit too, you had to go through bone marrow biopsies and spinal taps, and where they're taking out your spinal fluid and injecting chemo in there.
Yeah, they would replace my spinal fluid with chemo, and
those were rough.
Yeah, they were rough because sometimes you would get that spinal headache but the procedure was long because they don't want to be quick about putting chemo into your spinal fluid. That can cause like a lot of problems. So I think I had 8 of those. Did I have 8?
It was a lot.
about 8 bone marrow biopsies as well.
And then, so we went, got through all of that. Thankfully, you were cleared there and able to move on to the stem cell transplant. We got in, you got admitted to the hospital. That was in June. And then that one was, that was probably the roughest chemo treatment of all of them.
Yeah.
But they, when I explain it to people, I say they essentially, they kill you. They take you down to death, to where there's, you know, completely kill your bone marrow.
A lot of people don't survive that prep chemo before.
And your brother, thankfully, was a perfect match. Went through and donated his stem cells. And then got a pretty cool video of when they, it's in this deep freezer thing, and they, it's very cinematic. They open it up, and the freezer, you know, comes up. But for the most part, the procedure itself is fairly simple. They have to hand IV it because they want it to go slow, slower than what an IV will go. And that was, you know, the very simple actual procedure, the stem cell transplant. And they just inject it in you, and, you know, got through that process. And then there was, I mean, it was really tough. I remember, I think the worst of the worst of everything was the mucositis. You know, that was, you know, again, you're cold as ice the whole entire time. So strong.
Sores in my mouth, down my entire esophagus, all the way to my stomach, like massive sores. And it produced a mucus that was, I had to have a tube attached to my bed. And just 24/7, I was spitting into this tube, and it would turn into like a cement really quickly. They had to replace my entire tubing every single day because it was so...
It's like when you go to the dentist and they suck out your... You had one of those because and they just let me do it myself.
I remember just breathing, and tears would come down my face, and I'd say, I'm not crying. It's, there's just so much pain that it's involuntary. My body is forcing tears out. It was a very, very painful, which I've heard is when you have a bone marrow transplant, that is something that commonly happens. It wasn't rare for me to have that, but...
That's one of the common side effects of that chemo treatment. And then I remember, you know, you really didn't go under for any spinal taps or any of that stuff.
No, I elected not to have, not to go under for my procedures. I would let them give me local numbing because that's what's important. When you have anesthesia, it's not stopping any pain. You're just unaware, you know. You can get the local anesthesia. I liked to be awake for all of my operations, all of my procedures. I wanted to know what was going on. I had no control over anything that was going on in my life or my body. The one thing I could control was my awareness. So I wanted to hear what they were talking about. I wanted to hear if they saw something weird or, you know, I wanted to be awake. And they were, you know, they were okay about it. They were nice about it. They're like, yeah, nobody really does that, but if you want to, you can. I only had one anesthesiologist give me a hard time about it, and he said, you're going to move and you're going to freak out. And you remember, he was pretty rude. And I said, I've done this quite a bit. I'm not going to move. I'll hear you cutting or whatever you need to do, but I'm going to be awake. I want to know what you're talking about. And afterwards, instead, when he came out to tell you that, you know, I was fine after surgery, he said, yep, she didn't move. He didn't say, like, she's awake and she's good. He was just like, yeah, well, I guess she was right. She didn't move. So, but, it was, I'm glad that I knew what was going on for all those things.
Yeah, and during that time, too, like I said, you were stone cold throughout everything. You didn't, you know, get any pain medicine for anything throughout the whole process, except for the mucositis. And I remember, you know, they would ask you, you know, what your pain level was. You'd say, you know, low numbers, and you had really high pain tolerance. But I remember when they asked you about the mucositis, you were like, like 10 out of 10. And I knew you were hurting. And I remember on the video thing, you were rocking, kind of banging your head, and you were just like, you were going crazy. The pain was so bad, but you were still refusing any pain treatment.
It was hard. I thought I chose natural labors with all the kids, and you know, I like to think of myself as a strong person, mentally and physically. But that was It was really hard, and there was no way I could eat. I needed something to help me eat, because I knew if I stopped eating, I had already been warned by another patient, like, don't stop eating, because if you stop eating when you get the mucositis, they'll make you stay longer. And it was already supposed to be a 6-week stay for transplant, and I was never allowed to see my kids because I had a common cold, and they didn't want me. I could have gotten sicker. My immune system was already low, so I'm fighting cancer and I have a cold, and they wouldn't let me see the kids during any of my stays. They couldn't come up and see me or anything like that, but I knew I wanted to get home and see them. I didn't want to stay any longer than I needed to, and so I knew I had to keep eating. And I ended up getting a pain pump, and so when it got like really bad, I would just hit a button for my pain pump, and then I would, when I had some of that pain medicine in me, I would make a really cold protein shake. Ray had brought me some protein from Burn Boot Camp, and my Vitamix and almond milk and stuff like that, and so I would make my own protein shakes. And I'd wait for that pain med to get in, and I'd chug one, and then my nurse would say, how much did you drink? And I was able to keep enough calories in my body that they didn't threaten to make me stay any longer.
Yeah, that was that. I think that was the roughest piece of the whole thing. But you were a beast through that, got through that, and then had a successful transplant. Mm-hmm. That was the last day of June, which was your new birthday, and you were finally able to come home and start working on rebuilding our life back up, you know, and still took some time. I remember you were still on an IV.
Yeah, home IV for like 100 days.
I had to learn how to administer an IV and be your nurse and clean your ports and do all of that. It's funny how, you know, there's a lot. I was just kind of reflecting on this as we were preparing for this. You know, a lot of little things that kind of forgot about,
yeah,
you know, beforehand. You know, I forgot about just what life was like of, you know, you have to be on these magnesium treatments and having to take care of your port, clean it. I was so scared I was going to mess up or do something wrong. You get an infection, but you never thankfully got an infection. So I was actually a pretty good nurse and was never really into medical things, never really thought I'd be able to do that. But we got through that. And then moving forward, you know, we were kind of, you know, we were looking into what are we going to do next with life, you know, right, now that you were home. And
U of M wouldn't let me go back to work was a thing. And I understand, you know, it was hard at first, but I understand the reasoning. And, you know, I have a lot of complications from transplant, like my eyes. I have to use stem cell drops in my eyes every day. So they don't, before I did computer work and things like that, and they were like, no.
The stem cell drops are pretty cool. They're I mean, as far as I think, you know, fortunately you have to use them, but because the graft versus host disease, which if you don't know, graft versus host is what happens when you get a stem cell transplant, your new stem cells, the goal is for them to go in and kill any remaining cancer cells, but they will also attack other rapidly producing cells such as your eyes, your skin,
your mouth,
different areas like that. So your liver, which you're having liver issues, some of those things. Mm-hmm. So they put you on immune suppressants to slow down that immune response. And so, but it's graft versus host disease. There can be different levels of it. There can be sometimes it's short term, sometimes it's lifelong, mm-hmm, long term. And so one of the things that was being affected was your eyes. And
yes,
so
I actually lost my eyesight for a few days.
So the stem cell eye drops are a pretty cool thing. They come to our house, draw your blood, take the blood, spin it up, get the stem cells out, make an eye drop out of them. Those have been one of the only things that have helped with your eyes. Eyes being the biggest issue why you're not able to work. So
the eyes are, because you can get graft versus host disease of many areas of your body, but the transplant doctors at U of M told me the eyes are one of them that will never get better, unfortunately.
You don't get your eyesight back after the fact, so gotta be very careful with screen time and with that. So then fast forwarding through, we got through the stem cell transplant, getting your health back. Mm-hmm. The chaplain there Bruce had given you a list of bucket list, not of a bucket list of before you die, but when you live. Your bucket list was riding in your Jeep with the top down, going to Disney, and getting through a workout, being healthy enough to get through a workout. We pretty much knocked all those things out in the first couple months mm-hmm. of you being home. Took our kids to Disney, got the top down that next spring, started getting your workouts back in. We even got a trip to Hawaii, which is like your favorite vacation spot. So, and then
the Hawaii trip was planned before I got sick.
Yeah,
it was supposed to be for my 40th birthday.
It's a 40 plus one birthday trip.
We were able to push it back.
So we got that knocked out, and then and got to the point where it's time for me to get a job again.
Mm-hmm.
And I said the same thing as I'd said before, is I don't want to just take a job. I mean, if it comes down to supporting my family, no matter what, I'm going to work and mm-hmm. and figure that out. But I truly believe that if you're doing something you're passionate about, you're so much more effective at it and can be so much more successful at it. And I'm pretty obsessed with real estate. Have been the whole time you were sick. You know, I was listening to different podcasts about real estate, investing. Had gotten my license right before you'd gotten sick. Couldn't do much with it during that time. And I joke, I tried doing a few other jobs. I had, tried subbing. I was subbing at school, maybe taking a job at the school system or, you know, starting a different business. And had a good friend that had me co-list a house with her. And that first experience of listing a house, having it sold, kind of the highs and lows of it, I was addicted right from there. Knew that that was the next path I wanted to go down. And one thing that I said about you being sick and what I learned from that was, I didn't want to build something that could be taken from us. I wanted something that we would make money sleeping, or you know, or that, you know, regardless if you were healthy or I wasn't healthy, whatever the fact remains, that we would still have income coming in. So I wanted investment properties. I wanted to get rentals. I wanted to make other money outside of just real estate. Because the other thing is too, that's a very volatile career path. You know, I say like this: you could have a really great month. One month, the next month, not sell anything, you know, and so then all of a sudden your profits are smaller and smaller. So you coming out of the cancer and you know, looking for that next thing, real estate was what felt like the thing that I really had been wanting to pursue. And I was just scared of it. I think it was just fear that was holding me back for all those years. But been super blessed with that career path. And so we got our first investment property. And that was, one thing I want to talk about with that was, you know, I've always been thankful that you've always trusted me being the head of our household to make decisions that were best for our family. And I remember I came to you and I had an opportunity to buy a three unit, a triplex. And I said, hey, babe, you know, this is what it is. End up being, we had to pull out, we were trying to get lending, couldn't get the lending because neither one of us had worked for almost 2 years. Both had good credit scores, but had a lender tell me they could do it. Wasted some of our time, came out, said he couldn't, which was a blessing because had to get desperate. And we got desperate, pulled out an equity loan and took out your 401k, had just enough money to be able to get that property. We renovated it. We used the BRRRR method, buy, renovate, rent, and refi. And so that was our first property that we got. And I remember being overwhelmed by that. I was trying to get an hour here, hour there to do it. My mom came and looked at it, and she was like, oh, Raymond, this is just too big of a property. You're over your head with this, Raymond. And was kind of talking, you just need to sell it. And God spoke to me, gave me a name, gave my buddy Brad's name. He came and helped. We got that one going and rented that out. And so next thing I want to talk about is just, you know, where are we at now? Where are we at in life now? How are you feeling? How is life? So how are you feeling now?
I feel fantastic. I definitely still have my struggles. I have graft versus host disease of the liver and the eyes. I don't really have it much of the mouth anymore. I also have it in my hands, so I have some issues with my hands. But overall, I'm just, from where I was, I feel amazing. You know, I exercise every day. I lift weights. I run. Because there was a point, which we didn't mention, there was a point during chemo that I couldn't walk. I lost my ability to walk, but now I run every day. So I feel like I'm doing awesome. I I'm in some support groups on Facebook, which are sometimes helpful and sometimes not. And I see a lot of people say, like, I'm just so angry still. I lost my career. I can never do the work I was doing before. You know, I have these different health struggles now, and maybe I should have never done transplant. You know, I don't feel that way. I feel like I will take those health struggles and I will make them work. I get this bonus time with my family, with my kids. I don't mourn the loss of that 21 years working for the federal government. I'm grateful that I get to be home with my children, because I would have never, I would never had the faith to walk away from that and be a stay-at-home mom, where now I get to do school drop-offs sometimes, because you do them mostly, but school pickups I do a lot. I get to take my kids to activities. I go on every single field trip or thing that the school has. I'm not bitter that I lost my career. You know, I'm just glad that I get to do these extra things. And for me personally, spending that time with my children means more to me than any career could ever mean. And having health with some limitations or some issues means more to me than not being here. You know what I mean? I feel fantastic, and I feel like we're doing wonderful. And I'm so proud of you for having the faith to change your career to provide for our family. You know, we're on, you know, the two incomes, then down to nothing. And then it was like, well, personal training really isn't going to make up for two people's incomes. So you kind of, you made that shift, you pivoted, and you took on a new career path, and you're doing amazing at it. And I'm so proud of you for having the courage to do that and for providing for us and taking care of us.
Well, I say I do my best work when my back's against the wall. But yeah. And I truly, I'm as happy as I've ever been. I tell people this all the time. I've had my struggles with depression, with anxiety, and I truly, you know, when I first started doing real estate, I'd have some anxiety because it's a lot. People's, you know, dealing with their homes and a large purchase like that, you know. But now that I'm getting more seasoned in it, I don't have that as much. I don't feel anxiety. I don't feel depression at all. I'm every day excited. I wake up. I realize a lot of things that doing the personal training for so long, how draining it was. I had to be, be energetic. Yeah. I had to be the energy in the room.
You are a people person. You loved people.
I am a people person, and I'm a naturally energetic person.
But I can imagine that's very tiring.
Most days I'd be at the gym by 4 a.m., 4:15 a.m. And for me, with our schedule with our kids, I'm a morning person. I always say I'm half the man past 11 a.m. as far as when it comes to working out. So I would get up and go to the gym before. I'd work out at 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. And man, that just was depleting me. And the energy that I was pouring into training, I always joke that I never thought when I first got into personal training, I never knew if it would be a full-time job. I wanted it to be. So blessed that it was for 15 years. But I also never thought I'd be the 40-year-old trainer. I was like, that just isn't cute, you know. And I mean, I'm blessed. I still do personal training very, very part-time. But, I didn't realize how much it was depleting me. Until now that I don't do it, I really enjoy my evenings, being able to stay up and watch a football mm-hmm. game, or I feel like I have so much more energy.
Still work out. You still make time to work out every day.
I still work out every morning. We built a gym in our pole barn, so I got my morning guys. Mm-hmm. We come in here, we get it in.
But
so
that's
I got
it. Time. You're not working out all day long every day.
It's anymore. It's completely different now. Just I feel like I have I'm reinvigorated for my own personal health and fitness and. And then for real estate, I'm just on fire for real estate. I just love waking up, seeing what the day holds, what's going to happen today, looking at houses, what investment opportunities are we going to have? And we went just the other day, you were like, how many houses do we have now? I was like, we're at 7. And you're like, what, where'd we get them all from? You know, mm-hmm. and it's just
within a year,
with less than a year, it hasn't even been a full year yet. And it's just, God just opened up these doors and just put the right people and things in our life. And I joked with you not that long ago because you said, man, I feel that after you got COVID, we were saying like you didn't feel right after that. Mm-hmm. And then, being through that sickness, and you had recently had told me that you felt as healthy as you had before the COVID, when you mm-hmm. first got sick before the cancer, before the COVID. and that you're as happy as you'd ever been. And I joked with you and I said, well, if I got to go to the spa every day and sit in the sun every day and not have to work, I'd be happy too. But truly, I am too. I feel like we're as happy as we've ever been. You know, you're healthy. I feel healthy. The kids are healthy. You know, I'm so happy and I'm in love with my new career. You know, I feel like, you know, my one of my things, I told you this when you're in the hospital, one of my main, what's probably one of my main driving forces besides building something for our children to have later, my dream is for them to work with me in real estate one day. I don't want to force that on them. I want them to follow their dreams, but I pray that one day one of their dreams is to work with dad, but also was that you would never work again. I would tell you that and you're like, I don't know how that's going to work. We were so used to having two incomes. And I said, my thing is you're never going to work again. I didn't, after everything you went through, I just wanted you to be able to enjoy the rest of your life. And so for God to have lined this up to where I can do what I love and you not to have to work and be happy, you know, it does, it, you know, where we had such a hard story where it's turning out to be. I mean, we're still on our, you know, rebuilding phase of things, but I feel like God's really restored so much. I mean, where we were at financially, because my mindset was so much different with just like a, you know, saving and now with the investments, with, you know, what real estate, the doors that it's opened, you know, we're right back to where we were at financially in a way that is different than how it was before. You know, before I was very content with, you know, you weren't always the happiest with your job. It was just very stressful on you.
Very stressful, yes.
But I didn't see a way in which you didn't work where we could still have everything that we have.
Yeah.
And so it was, we were just content with that. I was content with my job. You know, I was like, well, I could do personal training. Like it's, you know, I'm pretty blessed. And I say this all the time. How blessed am I to have my two passions that I've named, you know, 15 years ago be my professions now?
Yeah.
You know, so I can't say that I've ever been happier, you know. And
well, I think a lot of the happiness too is a mindset, because we kept a positive mindset through literally everything, through months and months and months of horrible circumstances. We kept a positive mindset. So then when we came out from that and things were actually better, it was like, okay, we were positive, and now we're like, you know, mind blown, like life is so good, God is so good, and we're so very, very, very blessed.
We just, I joke about this, people ask you how well you're doing. I'll say, she's doing well enough that I take her for granted again, because, you know, you're healthy enough that we're doing good, where, you know, I remember you being in the hospital, and I'd cry all the time. I'd cry when I'd have to leave and miss you and that you weren't there. And now you're back to getting on my nerves. And so,
oh, great.
That's no, I'm joking. But, wonderful. You know, we take the little things for granted again.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You know, and so that's, you know, I think that's a blessing. And, you know, I'm excited for what the future holds with, you know, with our investments. You know, one of my goals, I'm thankful for my good friend Steve Gagnon. He had us write goals at the beginning of this year for real estate, our professional goals, our financial goals, our family goals. And, you know, I was just speaking with him the other day, and we had another goal setting meeting, and I have hit all of my goals financially for what I want to do in real estate. All of my goals, except for I wanted an out of state property, which when you start buying properties, you realize, okay, I got to first get this nailed down here. Still one of my goals to have destination properties, you know, short-term, rental investments. And, so I got, but almost all of my goals I've already hit, and much faster than I thought. And so this time when we set goals, I was like, I'm putting them way out there for my next goals. And but at the same time, I want to make sure that I have time for you and time for our girls.
Yeah.
And, you know, and because the greatest joy to me, my number one goal, you know, for all that I was telling the girls this morning, my number one goal is for my kids to have happiness and to follow their dreams. I want to see them just be happy and again, chase their dreams, you know, I think the greatest joy for us, you know, I think for one, having God in our life, two, marriage, and then three, the byproduct of having God, having a loving and faithful marriage is then having our children. Mm-hmm. And we just have three beautiful girls that are so much different from one another.
Oh, yeah.
And they're hilarious and fun and, you know, and so just seeing them grow and just you know, raising them together, so much fun. So that's, you know, my goal is for them to have that, and then after that, you know, everything else comes second. But I really want to keep going with the real estate. I want to see how big we can make this thing.
I can only imagine if this is where we are in less than a year. I can only imagine.
And then the next thing is me and my boy Connor, my executive producer here, is to grow this podcast. And we got future things with this. You know, I said when we started this, I don't care if it's just my mom that listens to this. So mom, you better be watching because I'm counting on you.
Oh, that's funny.
For my one follower and listener. But no, I really, I think that what we've been through is a lot of people go through it, but I think our journey is unique, but at the same time, relatable in a lot of ways.
Sure.
And I think that, you know, if we can just touch a few people, you know, and give them encouragement, you know, to keep going, to keep fighting, and then also chase your passions, chase your mm-hmm. dreams. Your passion, your dream was to not have to work and be able to be at home and be part of the kids, you yeah. know, and that was one of my dreams, was to be able to provide that. And truly, I don't feel like I work, you know, I'm out running around, hustling around and doing what I do best, dealing with people and just having a blast doing it. So it doesn't feel like work, you know, and so I'm excited to see what the future holds for that. And so with the kids growing and following their dreams, real estate, and then with our branding and our media company that we're starting to see where that goes for our near future. So tell me, what are your dreams and goals moving forward?
My dreams and goals moving forward. You know, I haven't really thought about that, just because right now the space I'm in, I'm so happy and grateful that I haven't really like set future goals. I probably should. But I haven't.
Vacations?
Oh gosh, yeah. Okay. Yes, I love to travel. I loved to travel before I got sick. And then earlier this year we did a hike through the Grand Canyon, and we hiked like 75 miles down into the Grand Canyon and back out, and we backpacked all of our own gear in, and that was so much fun. I want to do that again. Hawaii again. We've done Hawaii 5 times, I think, you know, over, you know, 10 years or whatever. 4 times? We've done it 4 times? Okay. Well, then we need to do another time and then it'll be 5. But I want to do some hiking in Hawaii as well. I mean, we've done hikes there, but not, when I say hiking, I mean hiking, but you know, 30 plus miles. I'd like to do some hiking in Hawaii. Maybe eventually take the kids back to Disney. That would be nice. You know, I just, anything with my family.
So thank you so much for watching our first podcast. Thank you to my beautiful wife for being my first guest. Look forward to keeping these going, touching on everything. I got some really great guests already lined up coming up here in the near future. So would love for you to tune in. Got some pretty funny stuff coming for you. A couple good ideas. I think they're good ideas. Hopefully you like them too. We're going to be talking about real estate. We're going to be talking about investments. We're going to be talking about ways to improve your life, health, fitness, a little bit of everything. So thank you so much for watching the original podcast, Real with Ray. Look forward to seeing you on the next one. Everybody have a beautiful, wonderful rest of your day. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Real with Ray podcast. Please like and subscribe, share it with a friend, and give us your feedback. What did you think of the podcast? If you've got any questions, we'd love to hear from you. Reach out and make sure you tune into the next episode. Let's go!